The headlines: the United States has announced a new package of sanctions against Russia as the war in Ukraine grinds on into its second year. Iran says its defense and military ties with Russia are based on mutual interests and not aimed at third parties. The Palestinians hold massive street rallies across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip in protest at Israel's deadly raid on Nablus. Hello and welcome, everybody. The U.S. has imposed new sanctions on Russia as Washington continues with a policy that has so far failed to stop the war in Ukraine. The sanctions primarily target banks and the defense industry. According to the White House, the measures will hit over 200 individuals and entities inside and outside Russia. Moscow has been hit with massive and unprecedented sanctions by Washington and its European allies since the start of the war last February. While Moscow says it's coping with the challenges, the attempts to isolate the country have backfired. They've caused inflations in Europe, which is highly dependent on Russian energy. Russia is one of the largest wheat and energy exporters. It says the sanctions are hampering its exports and pushing up food and energy prices. Ever since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, the European Union has faced widespread accusations of blindly following the U.S. and imposing sanctions on Russia. This has not come without a cost for the people in Europe. Many, including top politicians, have blamed the subservience for the dire economic conditions in the bloc. Mick Wallace, an Irish member of the European Parliament, sheds more light on the issue.
More and more, we've been playing a very subservient role to the interest of the US, and we are doing things that are not in the interest of the European Union, not in the interest of the people of Europe, and we're making decisions that are good for America, good for NATO, but not good for the people of Europe. The sanctions have had a dramatic impact on the cost of living for the ordinary people of Europe. We've seen huge inflation, we've seen huge price rises, and the sanctions in the last 12 months, I would say, have had more of an impact on the people of Europe than it's had on Russia. The US didn't want Europe buying gas from the Russians in the first place. That for the last couple of years, they tried to block the Nord Stream project. We're now buying filthy LNG gas, frack gas from the Americans, and at a much greater price. The industry in Germany is having to pay four times more for American LNG than the American industry pays back in America. So how is European business going to compete with American business if we're paying four times more for their LNG than the American companies? It's just absolute madness.
1 year on, the war between Russia and Ukraine is showing no signs of slowing down. The battles are now most intense in the east, including in the Donetsk region. Russia says it has killed nearly 240 Ukrainian soldiers during assaults there in the past 24 hours. Earlier, the deputy chief of the Russian Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, said Russia must win the war. Medvedev added that one of Moscow's goals is to push back threats at the country's borders, even as far away as Poland's frontiers. In turn, the Ukrainian president has pledged to do everything to defeat Russia this year.
We will defeat all threats, shellings, bombs, missiles, kamikaze drones, blackouts, and cold. We are stronger than all of this. It was a year of endurance, a year of compassion, a year of bravery, a year of pain, a year of hope, a year of perseverance, a year of unity, a year of invincibility, a fierce year of invincibility. Its main conclusion is that we have survived, we had not been defeated, and we will do everything to win this year.
Moscow currently controls around a fifth of Ukraine's territory over the past year. It has annexed four eastern Ukrainian regions after holding referendums there. Kiev and its Western allies have rejected the votes as a sham. With the help of Western military support, Ukraine has also been making some advances against Russia. The Kremlin says it launched the war in response to NATO's eastward expansion. However, Kiev and the West say the war was unprovoked. The conflict has so far claimed the lives of tens of thousands of people on either side and displaced millions more. Iran says its military and defense ties with Russia are based on mutual interests and not aimed at third countries. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani made a comment in an interview with Russia's Sputnik News agency. He said that Tehran and Moscow are boosting their relations based on the political will of their top leaders. The Iranian official also reiterated his country's call for a political solution to the Ukraine war. He said that Tehran has been pushing for that since the beginning of the conflict in February last year. Kanani also said that the countries which send tens of billions of dollars in military aid to one side of the war do not want the conflict to end. He was referring to Western states' military support for Ukraine. On this segment of the program, thousands of Palestinians have poured into the streets across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip and protested Israel's deadly raid on Nablus. The rallies came following an earlier call by the Palestinian resistance group Lion's Den. It urged Palestinians to take to the streets to show the world that the resistance is ready to give a rapid response to any Israeli aggression. Ismail Haniyeh, who heads the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement, issued a message lauding the massive street rallies. He said the people of Palestine and the resistance front will not allow anybody to stop the ongoing anti-Israeli uprising across the West Bank. Nearly a dozen Palestinians were killed and more than 100 were injured in the Israeli forces Wednesday raid on the city of Nablus. A 22-year-old Palestinian youth identified as Mohammad Jawabara also died early Friday. He succumbed to injuries suffered earlier on Thursday during an Israeli attack on Al-Arub refugee camp in the city of Al-Khanil. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Mona Candy, who's joining us from Ramallah. Also, we have journalist, author, and activist Fra Hughes, who's joining us from Belfast. Welcome to the program. To the both of you, let's start off with Mona. Bring us up to speed on the recent Palestinian rallies that have taken place across the occupied West Bank and also in the besieged Gaza Strip in protest at Israel's deadly raids that have taken place over the past 2 days, most notably the one that took place in Nablus.
We can say that there was kind of a quick response by such demonstrations and protests following the Israeli massacre that was carried out in Nablus, left 10 Palestinians or 11 Palestinians killed in Nablus city, and over 100 Palestinians were wounded. At least two members of the newly created Palestinian resistance group, the Lion's Den, were also murdered in Nablus city by the Israeli forces. The Lion's Den group called on the Palestinians to go to the street, to express their anger, to be united, and to tell the world that the reprisal and the response would be quick, not only from the Lion's Den, but also from all the resistance groups. And this is what happened. Thousands of Palestinians flocked to the streets in Ramallah, in Tul Karim, in Al Khalil, in areas around Al Quds, like Shafat and Qalandia refugee camp, in the Gaza Strip. Palestinians were reunited on one thing, that they follow and support the resistance, that the call, the urgent call by the Lion's Den for all the Palestinians were responded after midnight to tell the Israelis one thing, that Palestinians are still adherent to the choice of resistance, that the Israeli crimes would have a serious response from the Palestinians, but the Palestinians are waiting maybe for the appropriate response and the planning for the appropriate response. 11 Palestinians were killed, and their blood is very precious for the Palestinians. Of course, one day after this massacre, a general strike was declared. A day of anger was declared on Thursday, as well as today, Friday. Demonstrations and protests had taken place all across the occupied West Bank, and a number of Palestinians were wounded because of confrontations that took place as well.
Frau Hughes, I want to get your perspective on the recent increased Israeli aggression and crimes against the Palestinians. Of course, it has been going on for a few months now, but how much of what we're seeing right now do you also attribute to the inauguration of the new extreme far-right Israeli cabinet?
Well, I think what we're witnessing is exactly what you're saying. It's an extension of the new policies of the new right-wing government. I was going to say the gloves are off, but I feel the gloves have never been on. We're talking about specifically really from maybe December 2022, but we can go back 100 years, we can go back 1922. We can see Zionist aggression and violence within historic Palestine before the state, the murderous, the apartheid regime was created in 1948. So what we're witnessing is a further kind of escalation as such of settlements, of settler violence, of state violence, of government violence, and of IDF violence. The fact that 11 people were martyred, 11 people were murdered, 100 were shot, and I believe 25 may be seriously ill, points to a shoot-to-kill policy of anyone on the streets during these raids, anyone at a window, anyone at a roof overlooking the events with a phone, looking on to see what is happening, are all targets. And it appears to be a de facto rule now that any Palestinian on the street during an IDF raid is subject to summary execution. I read and I watched some video, I read text and I watched video and I heard witness testimonials of how special IDF forces dressed as women and hiding in some of the mosques were there in order to carry out these executions of people they believe may be involved in the resistance. And remember that the Israeli occupation of the West Bank is illegal. The Israeli siege on Gaza, those unilateral course of measures are all illegal. Palestinians have the right, and I stand by them under international law, to resist by all means necessary an illegal military occupation. But it's such a one-sided asymmetrical fight where men and sometimes women who just have guns and their bare bodies are fighting, you know, tanks, they're fighting armored vehicles, they're fighting Israeli stormtroopers who have all the modern technical paraphernalia that is required to stay alive on the battlefield. So the Palestinians are probably among the bravest people in the world, but what price they will pay to stand up to this Israeli aggression, I think is staggering. Their bravery is unparalleled, and unfortunately their death toll may be something similar.
All right, thanks a lot. Mono Candil joining us from Ramallah. Also thanks to journalist, author, and activist Frau Hughes joining us from Belfast. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. Elsewhere, North Korea says it has test-fired four strategic cruise missiles towards the sea off the coast, off the east coast, rather, of the Korean Peninsula. The North says the launch aims to demonstrate the country's deadly nuclear counterattack capability against what it calls hostile forces. Pyongyang said the four cruise missiles hit a preset target after traveling for 2,000 kilometers. The launch follows a tabletop exercise at the Pentagon by the U.S. and South Korea. The two said the exercise focused on responses to a nuclear attack by North Korea. Washington and Seoul have also stepped up military drills in the region over the past several months. Pyongyang is strongly opposed to that, saying that it regards the ramped-up drills as a declaration of war.
The U.S. wasted no time scrambling jets in response to North Korea's recent long-range missile launch, deploying strategic assets capable of carrying nuclear bombs with South Korean fighter aircraft. At the United Nations, the U.S. placed responsibility for the tension on North Korea.
We echo the Council's consistent demand that the DPRK comply with its obligations under numerous UN Security Council resolutions, abandon its weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile program in a complete, verifiable, and irreversible manner, and engage constructively in diplomacy.
North Korea has steadily developed a nuclear deterrent in the face of expanding U.S. militarization of South Korea. China calls for dialogue.
On the Korean Peninsula issue, we adhere to pursuing in parallel the establishment of a peace mechanism and the denuclearization process of the peninsula, and address the legitimate concerns of all parties in a balanced manner, and maintain peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula.
The U.S. has agreed to frequently deploy nuclear-capable weapons to the region at South Korea's request. The U.S. and South Korea seem to have agreed to raise the tension on the Korean Peninsula in an attempt to somehow force North Korea into negotiations on arms control or denuclearization. This reverses the policy of the previous South Korean government that brought about a reduction in tension through engagement and dialogue.
Local analysts warn of potential conflict.
When North Korea does something, the South Korea-U.S. alliance reacts. And if the South Korea-U.S. alliance does something, North Korea reacts. And this vicious cycle continues. The stronger the deployment of U.S. strategic assets, the more fragile the peace on the Korean Peninsula, and the faster the arms race. And this risks creating a security dilemma and, more seriously, a war crisis.
More regional tension seems inevitable as South Korea seeks to celebrate the 70th anniversary of its alliance with the U.S. with ever larger war games. Frank Smith, Seoul.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Iran's domestic production capacities. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As you know, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, dubs every Iranian calendar year with a theme which fits to the conditions of the time. The leader named the current Iranian year as the year of production, knowledge-based, job-creating. The themes of the year are chosen by Ayatollah Khamenei to motivate the officials and the people towards putting the internal potential capacities into effect to push the country on the course of progress. Thus, we have prepared a series to briefly review Iran's capacities in various fields. In a couple of episodes of this series, we have dwelled upon the reasons of the leader's high emphasis on production. Stay tuned, please. Production is not a mere motto, but it is a strategic goal which has been seriously pursued and persuaded by Ayatollah Khamenei for almost two decades. Production is the key word of resistance economy. As the leader has stressed that resistance economy should be generative internally. In other words, it should have the least dependence on foreign countries. This will make the domestic economy stable and resilient against hostile policies of enemies. According to the 5th Economic Development Plan and the 20-year Perspective Plan, Iran should reduce its reliance on oil revenues and increase exports through domestic production. This will enhance economic indices. Mohammad Khoshchehre, an expert of economy, says Iran's economy is facing challenges such as inflation, unemployment, decrease of national production, decrease of economic growth rate, and so on. To cure these challenges, we should first recognize the root causes. All economic challenges of the country have their roots in the disorders existing on the course of national production. National production induces identity and is the essence of national economy. It means that Iran's economy is originated in inefficiency and disorders of national production. If national production had an appropriate situation, it would act as a heart which prevents indolence, languish, and weakness of the patient via proper pumping of blood. Support for national production means improvement of economic indices such as unemployment, inflation, and poverty, which cause dissatisfaction among people. Ayatollah Khamenei says, if everybody pursues national production, many of the economic problems and livelihood problems of people, both the issue of employment and the issue of investment and other things, will be solved. Social ills will greatly decrease. The leader continues, I strongly believe in this move. I believe that the remedy for the country's problems, the key to the country's challenges, is the promotion of domestic production in different sections. The door to convey life, light, and force into the country is this very door that has been opened by the elements responsible for production. There is no other way. Ayatollah Khamenei, in his message for the new Iranian year, 1401, said, production is the key for solving economic problems and the main way to go through economic hardships. In addition, economic growth, increase of employment, decrease of inflation, increase of per capita income, improvement of public welfare, increase of self-confidence and national dignity is associated to the spread and promotion of an elixir called national production, relying on which has brought about good consequences during these years. The leader of the Islamic Revolution has stressed in various speeches that economy is the tool for increase of power. He says, the country should become powerful. Becoming powerful is among our goals. Well, this power may seem military power in the first phase and the first glance, yet it appears very broader than the domain of military power. The dimensions of power are vast. It has economic dimensions. Considering the fact that economy has turned into a tool to push forward the goals of countries and governments, Bolstering of economic factors is a very important and a strategic measure. Today, many thinkers and analysts maintain that economy has turned into a strong arm for nations in the face of rivals and enemies. This can be proved easily in the confrontations of governments with each other. Illegal sanctions of foreign regimes are among important challenges ahead of the Iranian economy. Unstable oil revenues play little in determining crude prices and even rate of crude exports. Experience shows that the crude prices have been highly oscillating in various junctures. Crude revenues have been the Achilles heel of Iran's economy. This has emboldened the enemies to pressure the Iranian nation through cruel sanctions on oil and affiliated industries. Iran has been under cruel sanctions, which have been imposed illegally on the country for more than four decades by the United States and the UN. That's why the leader has urged the officials and the nation several times to do their best to sever the country's dependence on a single product, namely oil.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
We have gathered tonight to celebrate the birth anniversary of the grandson of the Prophet, the heart of Fatima, the beloved of Ali, the supporter of Hassan, the brother of Zainab, and the father of Sakina, and the chief of the youths of paradise. I would like to take this opportunity tonight to talk about three or four different events or narrations about the childhood of Hussein bin Ali. Not necessarily the events as such, but about the status of Hussein when he was a child. Because sometimes we think that Imam Hussein is great because of what happened in Karbala. No doubt about it. The status that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had given to him from before was there. Karbala even elevated that. Allah blessed him with certain, you know, privileges that he had not given to anyone else. For example, when we hear about the statement that when you recite the dua under the Qubba, the dome of the shrine of Hussein, your dua would be accepted. When you hear about the Turbat of Hussein, these are some of the things that Allah has given to him after the Shahadat. But Hussein, when he came to this dunya, he came as a masoom. He was there as an imam to guide the people after his father and his brother. But let me begin with a statement which you have heard many, many times, but I would like to just put it in a different context here. And this is the time when the Prophet was alive, and the hadith is from the Prophet himself. And so we are talking about the first 10 years of Hussein's life. Not more than that. Maybe this is actually even towards the middle of the time when the Prophet was in Medina. where the Prophet said in a very famous hadith where he says, Al-Hasan wal-Husayn, Sayyida Shababi Ahlul Jannah. Talking about both brothers together, he says, Hasan and Husayn are the chiefs of the youths of paradise. This hadith is actually so famous that if you look at the standard use in ilm hadith, by Shias and Sunnis both, this will be hadith mutawatir. Mutawatir is a hadith of highest level, where then you don't need to go and look at the individual, you know, narrators of it, because it has been narrated by so many different sahaba. This is a statement you will find from a very prominent sahabi by the name of Abu Sa'id al-Khudari, who lived for a long time, means even on the day of Ashura. Imam, in his khutbah to the Yazidi army, he says, you know, didn't my grandfather say about me and my brother that we are Sayyida Shabab Ahl al-Jannah? Then he says, if you don't believe in me, go and ask Abu Sa'id al-Khudari. Means he has been mentioned by the Imam in his khutbah. So Abu Sa'id al-Khudari is one of the prominent Sahabi companions of the Prophet. Then you have another really famous one, Abdullah ibn Abbas. Then Huzaifa. Huzaifa was so close that the Prophet disclosed to him a secret about the names of some of the hypocrites actually around him. And then, mashallah, we also have from Umar ibn Khattab this hadith. And from his son, Abdullah ibn Umar. And these have been quoted by not just one, you know, book. You have Sunan Tirmidhi, Musnad Ahmad bin Hanbal, Mustadrak of Hakim Nishapuri, and even Ibn Asakir, Ibn Majah, and many others. Hakim Nishapuri is a very interesting scholar of hadith among Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. He actually compiled his book as an appendix to Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. He said that I looked at the criteria used by Bukhari and Muslim to decide which hadith is authentic. And he said, looking at that, I came to realize that on the standard used by Bukhari and Muslim, they have ignored many, many ahadith. So all those which were ignored by Bukhari and Muslim in their Sahih, Hakim Nishapuri brings it in. And his book is known as Al-Mustadrak al-Sahihain, which this is a companion, you know, trying to complete Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. And there, after quoting this hadith, Al-Hasan wal-Husayn, Sayyid al-Shabab Ahl al-Jannah, which you will not find in Sahih Bukhari or Sahih Muslim, but Hakim Nishapuri from more than one Sahabi narrates this, and then he makes a comment there. He says, "Hadha hadithun qad sahha min awjahin kathira." This hadith is authentic from different dimensions. وَعَنَا أَتَعَجَّبُ أَنَّهُمَا لَمْ يَخْرِجَاهُ. And I'm really surprised why Muslim and Bukhari did not include that in their books. So this is a Sunni scholar basically, you know, criticizing Bukhari and Muslim for not including this hadith in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. But when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants to preserve his nur, nobody can, you know, extinguish that at all. The narration of Abdullah bin Umar is very interesting, because normally we just hear Al-Hasan wal-Husayn, Sayyida Shabab Ahl al-Jannah. But he said, the Prophet said something at the end. Al-Hasan wal-Husayn, Sayyida Shabab Ahl al-Jannah. Hasan and Husayn are the youths of the, chiefs of the youths of paradise. وَأَبُوهُمَا خَيْرٌ مِنُهُمَا. And their father is better than them. You want to maintain that protocol should be there. If you're saying Hassan and Hussein are the chiefs of the youths of paradise, what will happen to Ali? You know, Rasulullah says, وَأَبُوهُمَا خَيْرٌ مِنُهُمَا. The same hadith of Sayyidah Shabab Ahl Jannah, Huzaifa has another context to that. He actually was there the night this hadith was basically pronounced by the Prophet. He says, I was in the masjid. Rasulullah came out from the masjid going to his house. Somehow Huzaifa, I don't know why, started following him. And it was dark. Rasulullah stopped for a moment. And he said, is it you, Huzaifa? And he says, Ya Rasulullah, it's me. And then Rasulullah says to him, Malakun min al malaika lam yahbat ila al ard qabla hadhihi al layla. Oh Huzaifa, you do not know. An angel descended to the earth first time. He had never come down to the earth until tonight. Ista'adhana rabbuhu. He asked the permission of his Lord, and yusallim alayya. He asked the permission of the Lord to come down and to greet me and to give me this good news. وَيُبَشِّرُنِي. To give me the good news. أَنَّ الْحَسَنْ وَالْحُسَيْنِ سَيِّدَ شَبَابِ أَهْلِ الْجَنَّةِ. And then this is the part where you see the extra wordings there. وَعَنَّ فَاطِمَا سَيِّدَةَ نِسَاءِ أَهْلِ الْجَنَّةِ. So in the earlier version of Abdullah bin Umar, Abuhuma khayru minhuma. In this another version of Hudhayfa, after saying Al-Hasan al-Husayn Sayyida Shabab Ahl Jannah, the Prophet says that this angel, and the Fatima Sayyidat Nisa'i Ahl Jannah.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Zionist regime forces have violently ransacked cells of Palestinian prisoners in the Ramon prison before transferring dozens of them to an unknown location, demonstrating once again that the Tel Aviv regime does not shy away from using repressive measures against Palestinian inmates. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, Israeli regime troops raided Section 3 of the detention center and used pepper spray on Palestinian prisoners. The advocacy group added that some 80 prisoners were transferred from the Ramon jail to another unknown location. The Asra Media Office, AMO, another Palestinian prisoners' rights group, said Israeli forces fired tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and rubber bullets at the prisoners before transferring them to another jail. There was no immediate information about injuries among the Palestinian detainees. The report prompted the Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement to denounce the vicious assault. It held the Zionist regime fully responsible for protecting Palestinian prisoners, stressing that such attacks and violations are carried out systematically. Hamas spokesman Abdul Latif Qanu said in a press statement that Israeli acts of aggression and crimes would not manage to undermine Palestinian prisoners' willpower. He called on Palestinians from all walks of life to stand in solidarity with the inmates in order to achieve their rights and freedom. Voicing his group's full solidarity with Palestinian prisoners, Qanu said suppressing Palestinian prisoners and depriving them of their basic human rights will only make them more determined to continue their struggle. More than 7,000 Palestinian prisoners are currently held in some 17 Israeli jails, with dozens of them serving multiple life sentences. Palestinian detainees have continuously resorted to open-ended hunger strikes in an attempt to express their outrage at the detentions and harsh conditions in the Zionist regime's jails. Senior Palestinian officials say the Zionist regime must be held accountable for its persecution of Palestinian people, including its mass and arbitrary detentions. Palestinian inmates have also been subjected to systematic torture, harassment, and repression all through the years of the Zionist regime's occupation of the Palestinian territories. Also, according to the website of Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, Palestinian prisoners in the Zionist regime jails are in their eighth day of rising up in a collective call to action demanding justice and liberation. They have announced an escalating program of a struggle leading up to 22 of March, the first day of Ramadan, when prisoners have declared they will launch a collective hunger strike. The prisoners' movement has risen up in response to repeated attacks by the occupation regime aimed at rolling back everything that has been won by the prisoners through decades of a struggle, from preparing their own food in bakeries to having more than 4 minutes to shower. Further, these daily attacks inside the prison are combined with escalating political assaults, including the passage by the Zionist Knesset of law designed to strip citizenship from Palestinians from occupied Palestine 48 and force them into statelessness if they receive financial support from Palestinian entities. Even this new legislation pushed by Zionist far-right forces was an act of revenge after the Palestinian people and the world witnessed the joyous homecoming of Karim and Maher Yunus after 40 years behind the Zionist regime's bars. In a statement, the Higher National Emergency Committee of the Palestinian Prisoners Movement declared, "In light of these challenges, we have decided to embark on a series of steps that begin with disobedience and end with an open hunger strike on the first day of Ramadan, bearing freedom as our soul demands. Everyone must carry this message of ours and our voice, as we can no longer tolerate the continued abuse against us day and night, the attack on our dignity and the dignity of our women prisoners. This strike is titled Freedom or Martyrdom, will be waged by every capable prisoner of all factions, and we will engage in this strike with unified demands and unified leadership, which we also want to see outside, and this unity is the main guarantor of the success of our struggle. Another statement followed on Saturday, February 18th, by the prisoners serving life sentence. As we go through this battle of dignity, we raise an open appeal to our people, all of our people, from the guns of the resistance and the revolution to the leadership ranks, to all of the factions, parties, forces, and movements, to respond to our voice and break our chains by standing behind us and supporting us. While we are ready to take steps of a struggle, the main solution to our issue is liberation by the same means by which the resistance and the revolution have liberated hundreds who preceded us in the path of pain. We continue to walk, carrying the stake of our just cause with our chains for many years, which for most of us have reached 2, 3, or even 4 decades. These have been a march in which we have increased our faith in the justice of our cause, and we hope we will soon reach the achievement of our freedom and emancipation at the hands of our people who have never forsaken, a revolution that we have never abandoned, and a resistance that lives within us. The Higher National Emergency Committee of the Prisoners' Movement called for a day of anger on Friday, February 24th, in support of the prisoners and the struggle of Palestinians in Al-Quds fighting back against ongoing attacks, confiscation of their property, and demolition of their homes. Our battle has begun and will not stop except with our freedom. The jailer wanted to fight us for our most basic rights, and we will respond to him by demanding our complete freedom, they said. Last Friday, February 17th, the prisoners engaged in a sit-in following Friday prayers in all the prison yards, announcing that the state of alert and mobilization was intensifying. The prisoners have begun wearing their brown prison uniforms, refusing to exit their rooms for counts and security checks, banging on the windows and bars of the rooms, and refusing to go out to the exercise yards. Sick prisoners have begun boycotting the prison clinics themselves, notorious for medical neglect and inappropriate statements. Palestinian women prisoners in Damon prison have also taken protest steps, with 6 women prisoners wearing the brown prison uniforms sat down in the prison yard and raised a handmade banner reading, "No bread or water, we want freedom." The 6 Palestinian women and girls who were subjected to penalties by the occupation included Nafet Hamad, Shatila Abu Ayada, Tahrir Abu Saria, Falestine Najim, Azhar Asaf, and Asil Al-Titi. Their fellow women prisoners pledged to continue to close the sections until all penalties imposed on the 6 are lifted, and emphasize that they are an integral part of the prisoners' movement. As the mobilization of the prisoners escalates, the Zionist Prison Administration is attempting to suppress their struggle by further intensifying the repression directed against the prisoners. On Monday, February 20th, a large force of repressive units invaded several sections in Gibola prison, confiscating electrical appliances from inside the prisoners' room. These repressive units are notorious for provoking the prisoners, ransacking their belongings, and turning the rooms upside down, often in the middle of the night, in a deliberate exercise of repression. Also on February 21st, repressive units stormed Section 3 in Ramon prison, firing stun grenades, tear gas and rubber-coated metal bullets at the prisoners before forcibly transferring 80 prisoners to other areas, including isolation cells, while others were transferred to Section 10 in Nafar prison. The Zionist Regime Occupation Prison Administration informed the prisoners that they would be subject to various collective punishments in response to their disobedience, including the closing of the canteen prison store, cutting off hot water in the bathrooms, locking the showers, closing morning exercise yards, and shacking prisoners leaving their sections for any reason, including those in need of medical care. In Megiddo, Ofer, and other prisons, basic electrical tools and heating coils have been confiscated from the prisoners' rooms and their exercise time has been cut. In Afar prison, a large number of ill prisoners were denied their medications, including diabetes, who need insulin.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha. You need to be well aware of what is taking place in the world and what is happening inside the country. For example, consider recent events. I would like to say something about the recent events in Iran. In recent events, the enemy's plot was comprehensive, but their calculations were wrong. They imagined that by using the petrodollars of a mercenary country of the U.S., they could weaken the Islamic Republic's determination. They were wrong, because the will and determination of the Islamic Republic was stronger and more adamant than all their elements of power. Their calculations were wrong. They imagined that by inciting some mercenary elements to seek asylum in other country, and by encouraging them to smear their own country, our youth would become discouraged in this way. They were wrong. Some went there, became refugees, and they also smeared Iran, but no one paid any attention to them. This was part of the enemy's calculations. Their calculations were wrong. The enemy has been doing everything it can against the Islamic Republic for the past 40 years, but because their calculations have been wrong, they have failed up until now. They failed in Iran's recent unrest, and they will continue to fail in the future if they make any further attempts. So that was about the enemy. But we too should be careful ourselves. We should not become proud. We should not become negligent. We must not be neglectful.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We should not say, "All right, it is all over now." We should not retreat from the field. We must stay active in the field. We must remember that which is holding the nation is hope and unity. Unity among the people. Yes, there are different tastes and opinions in the different cases, but despite this, there is still a consensus among the people about Islam, the system, and about the revolution. We must not lose this consensus. We must not contribute to ethnic and religious differences or the provocation of the feelings of one group against another. Anyone who takes a step to harm the unity of the nation has worked for the enemy. They have worked according to the enemy's plot. They have played the enemy's team. Everyone needs to take note of this, whether you are a preacher, an elegist, a cleric, a university professor, a writer, or a poet. Whoever you are.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.